Blog Talk Radio.
What's wrong with being an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Then grab it! Grab it!
Mary had a little lamb, it was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said Nagada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Reese.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio. Welcome back. I gotta figure out this volume thing. It's driving me up the wall. You know the date, if you don't know it. It's January 10th, 2011. I've got court tomorrow. Not like that's important. Yeah, right. But you know the deal, we get into it. As always, the angry prophet. Denouncing the hypocrisies of our time. That's Reese on the radio. And of course, I've got my cohorts with me. I've got JC, the producer. And I've got our good friend, her. Whether you like it or not. Mary, Mary, Why You Bugging is on Reese on the radio. And again, like I told you yesterday, we wanted a female perspective, and that's why she's here. Mary, Mary, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I'm always doing great. To get on a serious note, you and I, we watched a 2020 episode that happened on Friday. And we waited a little while because we had to gather some audio because there's some very, very important things about this particular story that we wanted to convey to our listeners. And for those of you who didn't see it, you can log on to abc.com and you can watch the story yourself. But I figured it needed some commentary. Mary, you watched it, and I think you and I think everybody who watched it sort of had the same response. You and I sort of coordinated and talked about this, and I don't think there was one thing that you and I disagreed about. It's like, this was horrific. It may have been the sway of the article or the story, but I think that anybody who watched this would be compelled to think, what the hell is going on with our criminal justice system? Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong, not at all. It was unbelievable, the whole story, from beginning to end. And I know that you said that there were some new developments, and unfortunately I have not seen any of those new developments, so I'm excited to hear what those developments are.
Well, the developments are, and we'll get into them after we talk about the story, but to tease it, so to speak, the developments are that the school system in this case, and those of you who haven't heard it, you're going, what about the school system, how they in charge? When you hear it, you'll understand. The school system is suggesting that the parents forced them to use this facilitated communication technique on their child. And because they sort of rattled the cage of the school district, that they may have created some enemies. And their enemies in the school district may have been a part as to why this situation happened to them.
Wow, that is unbelievable.
Well, when you and again, because you and I have already heard this story, that's why, I mean, there's no reason. That's the exact response I got. Wow. It was incredible. But let's play the first part. this is facilitated communication, and it'll be explained in the story. Chris Cuomo on 2020 covered this story about a young girl who has autism, and based on what happened to her as a child and growing up, she's virtually a vegetable in a living, breathing, and moving body. But this new technology called FC, facilitated communication, comes along, and parents believe that through this communication, facilitated communication, that they can actually speak to their child. Listen in.
It was just a few keystrokes, a couple of sentences on a computer screen. On November 27th, 2007, right around Thanksgiving, the severely autistic Aislinn Windrow is describing her weekend and types this on her computer at school. My dad gets me up, puts his hands on my private parts. Windrow's lives would never be the same.
It was a message on the answering machine. And I listened to it. He said there's been this allegation. It's indescribable. Wow!
Before this, the Windrows were convinced Aislinn had achieved a kind of miracle using a therapy called facilitated communication, or FC. A technique where a trained person using a special grip supposedly helps Aislinn move her hand to the letters so she can type out her thoughts. But that was before she entered high school and got a new facilitator named Cindy Scarcella.
Of all the people who had ever done facilitated communication with Aislinn, she knew the least about it. She sat through 1 hour, she said, of unpaid training.
1 hour?
1 hour.
That was enough for Scarcella to facilitate those sex allegations and everything to follow.
The allegations were just horrific, the kind of story would keep you up at night.
Lori Brazier of the Detroit Free Press covered the story from the very start. She says the school reported the allegations and the prosecutor's office sprang into action. She says that was their reputation with sex cases.
There was a sense that they'd never met a child who hadn't been molested. If an allegation was made, they would charge immediately.
Did they have forensics?
No.
Did they have statements from any other adults?
No.
They have anything they found in the house?
They had nothing. They had nothing.
What was the case based on?
The case was based on Aislinn's allegations, supposed allegations.
Aislinn, the autistic child who can't speak.
Right.
Okay. Tissue.
Now, it's just 2 days after Aislinn made those somewhat vague allegations at school. She enters this room at a special county agency where investigators hope she'll provide more details. They're watching what goes on from behind a glass.
Well, my name's Amy, and my job is to talk with kids about things that have happened.
A forensic interviewer is on the right side of the screen. On the left is the facilitator, Cindy Scarcella.
I want you to tell me everything that happened.
The Windrows, as well as experts in FC, had advised investigators to bring in another facilitator who knew nothing about what Aislinn was claiming. But that doesn't happen.
His penis is in you, and he's kissing you.
And now, with her help, Aislinn's allegations are mushrooming. The story's becoming more sensational. They type that sexual abuse went on since Aislinn was six, and that Tali did nothing. That Julian has taken photos, even forced her younger brother Ian to take part.
Okay, so your dad makes your brother touch him and you in your private parts.
The accusations are shocking if they are Aislinn's words, and investigators believe they are. They accept FC in large part because they say Julian and Tali did. But the Windrows realize now they've been deceiving themselves all along.
And we had to swallow a pretty bitter pill. It became pretty clear that that we were wrong.
They believed in FC more than anybody else.
So what? You know, a parent will try anything, and, you know, if they think it's going to help the child, they're the parent. It's the police's job to figure out whether she's reliable and whether a crime has been committed.
The authorities often get criticized because they don't follow up on allegations. Here, they did the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
They went after it. They were aggressive, thorough.
If they were thorough, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. This was I have a charge. This guy is guilty. We're going to set about trying to hang him. Don't bother us with the facts.
And Gordon says alarms should have been going off during that very same interview. Listen to these incredible mistakes.
What's Grandma's name? Her name's Julie?
Aislinn and Scarcella type out her grandma's name is Julie. It is Betty. They say Aislinn's dog's name is Henry. It's actually Nelson.
At each stage, it became more ridiculous. This, I mean, crazy things that to them was meaningless because they had a really good story here and they were running with it.
Not only running with the story, running to try and back it up. It doesn't go well. The police search the Wendrow's home and computers for those naked pictures. They find none. They take Aislinn for a medical exam. The nurse reports she observes no acute injuries.
It made absolutely no sense. And I truly thought this is just a horrible misunderstanding and it's gonna be fixed.
Tolly was confident because after so many years of trying to help Aislinn, there is one clear contradiction at the heart of these allegations.
If you've got a kid who can't talk and you are abusing that child, you don't fight so hard to make that kid talk.
And other people are already questioning the heart of the case, that Aislinn is able to communicate at all. Brazier says as soon as her first story on the Wendrows ran, she got a call from one of Aislinn's former teachers.
And she said, there is no way that this child's able to type. And I that's not what the police are saying or the prosecutors. And she said, if you said to Aislinn, point to the sky, the child would not be able to do that.
I'm going to write an A. I'll write a B.
When I met with Aislinn, there was no facilitated communication. So unlike the investigators, I got to see how Aislinn would respond without someone helping.
A. Which is the B? Aislinn, point to the B for me. That's an A?
The obvious question. If she can't identify letters, how can she spell? And if she can't spell, how could she write?
The only conclusion is, well, then she never could have said anything through FC. She couldn't have typed.
It all leads to one disturbing conclusion, a conclusion scientists have been reaching for years. Facilitated communication is fake. Long before this case, studies had found repeatedly kids weren't actually revealing inner thoughts using FC. The facilitators were typing for them, leading the child's hand, like a psychic over a Ouija board. But wait a minute. If Aislinn wasn't typing those allegations, it meant Scarcella was. How and why would she do that?
And that is pretty much the basis of this story. That here it was, an autistic child who didn't know the difference, as Chris Cuomo pointed out in his report, could not identify the letters A, B, and C, had the ability to write out, my father has touched me. My father puts his penis in me and kisses me. That she was able to type these words out. But she couldn't identify the first three letters of the alphabet. But yet, the prosecutors, in this case, went after this family. And what happens next is even more incredible. Even though they know, and even though a news reporter is skeptical, and most news reporters, when they hear a case of child molestation, it's immediately to vilify and to prosecute through the court of public opinion the abuser. But this reporter at the Detroit Free Press immediately sees something strange. Even when they get a phone call from a former teacher of the autistic child. If you tell the child to point to the sky, she wouldn't know what you were talking about. So how did she know words like penis? How did she know things like touch and inappropriateness and kissing? She couldn't even point out the sky. Which says, it gives... is insanity. And that's what makes this story so compelling about the criminal justice system, especially when it comes to the allegation of sexual abuse. Why did none of that matter? And why prosecute it in such a fashion? Now, Mary, from what we've heard so far, and you've seen the report, and I've seen it, I've listened to this four times already. Is it baffling to you, or is it disturbing to you? What's your take on this as a woman?
It's most disturbing to me. I mean, these people were, this family, the Wendro family, was reaching out to, I mean, they have this autistic child. She's, like you said yesterday, I think what you said was she basically is a living, breathing, walking vegetable because she cannot communicate at all. These parents are trying to do the best that they can to give their daughter the best life that they can. They reach out to, they find out about this facilitated communication, which for many, many, many years, if you read up on the history of it, has, you know, been proven to not be something that anybody really should be using. And
right,
then for the prosecutors to go the lengths that they did to tear this whole family apart is just, it's preposterous.
What I also, and that's the thing about this, if you'll hear it later on when we play it, that the prosecutor uses the family's ardent belief in facilitated communication as a reason to believe that it's real. So in other words, the parents are duped. They don't realize they're duped, and they're saying, hey, you believed in facilitated communication, so that's enough for us to believe that it's real. We're going to tell you that facilitated communication, no matter what the scientists say, the people who are professionals who say that it's bull, no matter what it is that the scientists say, you believed in it, so that's enough to make it credible. And that's even more disturbing. I mean,
it is most disturbing because, I mean, of course they're going to believe in it. I mean, first of all, they used this facilitated communication, I believe they said, throughout in junior high school, and the girl actually graduated from the eighth grade.
Yeah, but you know what? And that's another part. I didn't play that part, but you and I watched this, was that she was doing simple work like connect the dots. Is this thing not like the other, like you did in Sesame Street? One of these things is not like the other. And, you know, she had to, well, I mean, but that's the kind of very, very childlike. This was a girl who was a preteen at the time, and they were using what Sesame Street does for preschoolers to teach her and educate her. This facilitator gets involved, and she's doing homework. She's solving math problems with the facilitator. So she gets an aide who grabs her. And let's explain what this facilitated thing is. I missed a little bit about this because if you got some of it, Mary, please chime in. I got the impression, because I saw two different versions of this. There was one facilitator who holds the autistic child by the elbow and she types, but there were others who held the wrist. Doesn't that strike you as odd?
It does strike me as, the whole thing strikes me as odd. I mean, how you can just hold, I don't care where you're holding their arm. If they cannot, if the girl doesn't know A from B, how is she typing anything at all anyway that's making any sense?
And
but
allegations that mushroom into even more so.
I'm sorry, Reese, I didn't hear that.
No, I'm saying, it ended up mushrooming into things that were even more preposterous. It went from just daddy touches me and kisses me to my, well, we'll play audio later, but she implicates her other brother, I mean her brother, a 13-year-old, as being a participant in this sexual abuse.
To me, it was like a heinous crime against the family. I mean, I don't understand how, I don't understand where the ball was dropped in our justice system. Who in their right mind would have allowed it to get to the point that it did and allowed it to get almost immediately to where it got? Because, I mean, it spiraled like there was no tomorrow. I mean, immediately they locked up the father. Immediately they put the mother on house arrest. immediately they pulled the children out of the home without really doing any investigation.
Right. JC's out of line. JC, the producer, what's up, boss?
Yeah, I mean, when I was watching the story, I recall that from the day that she first typed out the words abuse, within 8 days, they had torn the family apart. Father was locked up in solitary confinement. Mom was off to...
Mother was arrested and put on house arrest.
On house arrest, and the kids were split up, went to a group home for abused kids, and no one knew where the hell poor Aislinn was. Now, I don't think they ever said where she was.
Right. Parents have absolutely no clue where their children are. Family completely torn apart. And prosecutors, who, in the perfect example of what the prosecutors did was, in this case, and Mary, I'm sure you'll agree with this, was they were even willing to take the false testimony of a perpetual vegetable.
It's unbelievable.
Isn't that strange?
After they proved that she obviously had no clue on how to type, first of all, and how to spell and how to do any of that. And like you were saying earlier, how do you go from connecting the dots to spelling out, to being able to spell out that your father is, you know, abusing you with his penis and kissing him, and now your brother's taking part. I mean, how do you go from one extreme to the other?
It's amazing. Let's play part two of this. We'll play that, and then we'll take a break, and we'll discuss part two of that. It's Reese on the Radio. Call up 347-308-8701. We're talking about the flawed facilitated communication and how it broke up this family, a 2020 report that aired on Friday. This is part two of this horrible story.
To see Ian Wendrow with his sister Aislinn is to witness a rare and poignant intimacy. He's as close to her as any brother could be.
She's adorable, and she's the best. I love her. She's the best sister I could ever have.
What's the bond like between the two of you?
It's very strong.
So strong, in fact, that when Ian turned 13, he turned his bar mitzvah into a joint ceremony in a synagogue filled with warmth.
That was probably one of the best days of my life, to be honest, because there was just so much positivity that was involved in that.
But 2 months later, it's all negative. Aislinn has typed those outrageous allegations via facilitated communication. And just hours later, Aislinn and Ian are ripped from their home by state child protection agents as part of a safety plan.
I thought I was feeling what I would feel if they actually had died. I felt that depth of loss, and I didn't know if I wasn't going to see them again.
I looked at her through the window and watched her, you know, just like drive away, and I thought, hopefully this is going to be over soon.
Not by a long shot. The machinery of the criminal investigation is already in high gear. And after that all-important forensic interview with Aislinn and her facilitator, Cindy Scarsella...
So your dad makes your brother touch him and you in your private parts.
Police now believe Ian is a witness and a fellow victim of Julian's abuse. It's perhaps the most troubling image of the entire case. Ian is brought to an interview room at the West Bloomfield Police Headquarters. A small boy talking to a seasoned police detective named Joseph Brousseau, who's not always visible in this video.
You don't know anything at all.
No.
For more than an hour, Ian is subjected to intense questioning, accusations, and a kind of psychological warfare by Detective Brousseau.
This is a 13-year-old child. He had no adult there looking out for his interests whatsoever.
It's obvious. You know what has happened between your dad and your sister. There's no doubt about it. And we agreed that we were only going to talk about the things that were true today, right?
I know, but I...
Brousseau tells Ian the interview is all about the truth, but then proceeds to lie to him.
There has been more evidence that has come forward
which clearly indicates that there's definitely something going on in the house and you are a part of it.
He tells the boy a call has just come in saying the police have concrete evidence that goes beyond Aislinn's statements.
What exactly is the fire? Is that what you
can tell me? Part of the investigation that can't be revealed at this point, okay? Like I said, I'm not going to lie to you. If I could tell you, I would, but I can't.
Not true. The police have already searched the Windrow home, found nothing. But despite the interrogator's mind games, little Ian remains resolute, insisting he's never seen his father abuse Aislinn.
No. No.
Never.
No.
Okay.
It never happened.
Are you not ready to talk about it yet?
No. Everything I told you, everything I know up to the point of everything you told me, so I don't know anything else.
The pressure starts to break the young boy down. He's scared, exasperated, even brought to tears.
You're lying.
When Brousteau still hasn't gotten the answers he's looking for, he turns hostile.
You're not a good liar, buddy. You're not a good liar.
I'm betting you. I'm not trying to lie to you. One thing.
You're
listening.
Not by telling me the truth.
I have to tell you the truth.
I think you've been telling me some of the truth, but I don't think you're being 100% honest with me. Okay? I'm not a dummy. You're going to tell me that you have never, ever seen any type of sexual contact between your dad and your sister.
No.
Frazzled by the intense badgering, Ian offers all he can think of that his father has showered with Aislinn because she can't do it herself.
Does him showering herself? I don't know.
Has he ever explained to you why he has to do that?
He doesn't have to. I knew why. She had autism. She needed help showering.
Brousseau's report on this interview goes into detail about the showering, as well as what Ian calls his dad's jokes where he flashed him, but says little about Ian's denials of witnessing abuse, and nothing at all about Brousseau's own lies to the boy. The emotional damage done by the interrogation is immediate and obvious. Ian is shattered. He has stood by his father, but Detective Brousseau has corrupted their relationship.
I watched the image of half my dad. The image of a trustworthy person.
Brousseau may be good at asking questions to frighten teens, but when we suggested he answer my questions, he refused. In sworn testimony, he said what he did was acceptable. He called the lies tactics necessary to get Ian to reveal all he knew.
It really came home to me how malicious and vindictive these people are, how aggressively they wanted to get us.
As the noose tightens around Julian and Tali, the kids get shuffled from home to home. Aislinn winds up in downtown Detroit, Ian in Pontiac, at this juvenile home.
It was a shock, to say the least. I was moved in with kids who were, like, at the time 17 and 18, whatever, much older than me, who had actually been abused, you know, and these are weird kids. It was scary.
The ordeal is punctuated by heart-wrenching moments like this. Ian tries to call his mom, but she is under strict orders not to have any contact with him whatsoever.
And for a brief moment, she asked, you know, hello. I said, Mom. And then she hung up.
And I heard him say, Mom. And I hung up because I was so afraid that if they somehow found out that I had contact with him, that it would be over. And then I just sobbed.
It was incredibly sad. I was, like, depressed the entire day.
Then the hammer drops. On December 5th, 8 days after those fateful keystrokes were first typed, Julian is home alone when police in SWAT gear come to arrest him.
So they cuffed me in the front, they put me in the police car. He told me, we're going to take you to the court, you're going to be arraigned, and you'll be back home within an hour or two. That's not what happened.
Instead, Julian is held here in solitary, a 6x6 foot cell.
All I knew was the counts they charged me with, mandatory, 75 years in prison. Life. It's life to me. I would never have the opportunity to hold my children again.
Tali is also arrested, but makes bail and is allowed to remain home wearing an ankle bracelet tracking device. Neither of them knows anything about Aislinn.
How often were you tormented that I don't know where she is, I don't know who has her, I don't know how they're taking care of her?
Every day. Every day.
That had to be the worst part.
Yeah, absolutely. And having no idea who was tucking her in at night, who was, you know, hugging her, all of that.
With the whole family's future hanging by a thread, the case is building toward a moment of truth.
Thank you, Aislinn, am I a boy or a girl?
And an answer to this question. Why would facilitators put words in the mouths of kids like Aislinn?
This is not the first time this has happened.
Other facilitators have made accusations like that?
Absolutely.
And they have. That's the scary part about all of this. When we come back, we'll talk about that interrogation of the police and a 13-year-old boy who's supposed to be, in most people's eyes, a victim of sexual abuse. But why would the police drag a 13-year-old boy into a police interrogation room and not have him speak to a forensic interviewer at the district attorney's office and have him interrogated like a criminal? When we come back, we'll talk about that and we'll play the third part of this farce of facilitated communication and the district attorneys who have never met a kid who hasn't been abused. It's Reset 347-308-8701. Again, 347-308-8701. It's Reset on the radio.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issue and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message. There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby, twinkle, twinkle.
Patrice on the Radio, and we're back. The number's 347-308-8701. And we are doing an expose on a 2020 report done by Chris Cuomo, who talks to a family that was rocked by allegations of sexual abuse by their autistic who pretty much can't decipher A, B, or C. She doesn't know them. But through a facilitator in a practice called facilitated communication. Facilitated communication accused her father of sexual abuse. And from what we heard so far in all of this, that they interrogated the 13-year-old son. And let's prepare into this. And know as well as I did that.
You're breaking up really bad.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know why that is. How about now? Any better?
That's better.
When have we ever seen a child who is an alleged victim in a crime be interrogated by the police? Have we ever seen this?
Maybe we've never seen it, but I'm sure that it's happened.
Which baffles me. I'm sure it baffles a lot of people that the police would drag this young 13-year-old boy, according to the allegations by this autistic girl, that the young boy is forced into a sexual act by the father, and in order to get information from him. Now, and to go back, a forensic investigation or a forensic interview with a girl, and they talked to her through this facilitated communicator, who says this is the allegations and everything. They ask her what her grandmother's name is. The facilitator gets the name wrong, says that it's Ellen or Ellie, and the grandmother's real name is Betty. They ask her the dog's name. The Aislinn says the dog's name is Henry. The dog's name is Nelson. She gets these things wrong. Real simple stuff. And I would think that the prosecutor would say, oh, there's a second victim. We need to bring him in because he's not autistic. He can decipher what is and what isn't going on. Let's talk to him and let's have a conversation with this young man. He'll be able to tell us what is and what isn't. But instead of bringing him into the district attorney's office to have this forensic interview, they sent him to a police station to be interrogated. It smells horrible.
Smells like a bunch of rotten eggs.
I mean, that's the part that I don't seem to understand. Why would they, and it I think, as far as the prosecutor was concerned, that what they wanted to do was to build their case any way that they could and they would distort the truth any way they wanted. As you heard in that interview with the young boy, he's saying, I'm telling you the truth. You know, he's crying, he's distraught, he's sad, he's upset, but they still keep going in this direction with him. I'm baffled as to why they would not bring him in to the district attorney's office if he is indeed a victim. You only bring perpetrators into the police station.
It baffles me on how these prosecutors and our justice system is so gung-ho on just completely ruining people's lives without any valid, you know, information, how they so quickly jump without doing any, you know, any valid investigation. And on a human-to-human level, and I use this analogy all the time, which I know that I've used it with you before, Reese, from one human to another, I mean, how, regardless of whether you're trying to meet a quota, you are, you know, you're being stressed out at work and you don't have enough cases to try, I don't know what the situation is, but on a human to human level, how could you go home and sleep and lay your head down on the pillow every single night knowing that you have torn this family and several other families have gone through the same thing? And none of the cases were actually even won, if I stand correctly. Actually, there was one case that was upheld, and I'll get into that a little bit later. I just read some information up on that, and I'll talk about that a little bit later when we have a little bit more time, because I know you want to play the interview they did with the boy.
Well, I played the interview that they did with the that's right. That's the third part. The interview that they had with him, and he called his mom, and you know, they pretty much wouldn't even let mom pick up the phone. You know, I played that part. Here's what I find troubling in a lot of ways was, if you believe as a prosecutor that these two children are part of abuse or have been abused, then you work to protect the two children. To separate them and to turn one against the other. Because remember, if you got a case, you have a case. Both kids corroborate a story. Both kids tell the prosecutor they were abused. But they have one kid who is defiant. They have an autistic child who's never spoken, who says that this happened. They have a kid who can clearly spell, can clearly write, and can clearly speak. And they use him and diminish him, destroy him, ridicule him, use psychological warfare, to use the words of Chris Cuomo, to break him down, to give anything that they can to demagogue the father.
The gentleman that was doing the investigation with him, the detective, was telling him, "Oh, you know, I think what he said was, you're not a good liar, buddy. Okay." And then you turn around, you tell him that you want the truth, but then you turn around and lie to him and tell him that, you know, you've recently learned that, you know, you have proof and you need him to tell you the truth. It's unbelievable. And the kid, if you watched it in his interview with the detective, was so distraught to the point where I was questioning, is he autistic too? Because those were the bodily actions that he was having. I was like, did I miss something? Is there something wrong with him too? Because he was just all over the place.
I think that what that was he was in a battle he couldn't win. He's saying to the police officer, this isn't true, and he wasn't being believed. And as a young man who was probably taught to trust the justice system and police officers, here is somebody he's probably brought up to trust telling him he's a liar. You're not a good liar. We know something happened. And he's sitting up going, well, the police wouldn't wouldn't tell me something that was untrue. They wouldn't. Maybe my dad did something. He doesn't believe. He doesn't know what to believe. And now he's giving up stuff. In one part of the interview, he's going, well, there was that one time when he showered with her, but he told me that it was because he's autistic. And he wanted to talk about that. He wants to give anything because he believes this officer. He's going, I got nothing to give you. I'll give you anything you want. All he wants to do is acquiesce. He wants to give the officer anything he wants, to not to just make it over. He's just saying, you're a police officer. You wouldn't lie to me, right? I, what about this? Are you talking about this? I know my dad did this. Is that what you're talking about that was inappropriate? Because I was there for this. And he's scared because he's thinking these people are an authority figure. A 13-year-old like him. We're not talking about a seasoned thug. We're talking about a kid who respects authority. And he'll give anything. What do I do to make this stop? You're saying that my dad did this. Okay, you're saying that my dad did appropriate. Okay, I'll find something inappropriate for you. If you just tell me that I'm going to go home. And what do I need to do? He's scared. He's distraught. They used him. They abused him as a kid. What he did. They see it. Do you agree?
Absolutely. They abused the kid so bad to the point where he was questioning how he now looks at his dad.
Yeah, I love that part. Not because you know what I mean. I say I love that because it shows exactly this kid was going. He's now believing the police so much because the police have hierarchy over his own father.
Right. He said, I'll never be able to look at my dad the same as a trustworthy individual.
Yeah, that's the line. As a trustworthy individual. He broke that kid down where he didn't even believe the father that he knew, that he loved, was a trustworthy individual. Even my dad is suspect now because you say so. He trusted the police officer so much. He was so broken down. It was Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
it's
Stockholm Syndrome. He was a prisoner in that room, interrogated, and now he was believing that the police officer, and the police officer convinced him, your dad is a bad man, and you're going to believe it. And it got to the point where he said, I guess you're right. My dad is bad. I guess my dad isn't a trustworthy person. And his entire thinking, and they didn't care. All they wanted was what they wanted. It didn't matter. That, to me, it's not just troubling, but it's disturbing.
Right.
And the police wonder why they're not, you know, trusted like they were in the 50s or in the 60s or, well, in the 40s. And it's crazy.
Well,
it goes to show. I mean, it goes to show, and you know, usually in the hood they don't trust the police, but it's gotten so bad in our legal system, period, that in nobody's hood are they to be trusted. I mean, how do we begin to weed out that bad apples?
Right, but and it's funny because this whole story talks about how the police. They had no forensic. They even did badger tests the autistic child, and they found no signs of sexual abuse. His girl saying that she was penetrated, and the gynecologist back with nothing.
Right. They had her tested.
Let's play part three of facilitated communications. I don't know. We'll talk about it, and then we'll get into some more news afterwards. This is such an incredible story. And, again, give us a call, 347-308-8701. It's Reese on the radio.
For the Windrose, the highly charged court hearing has proven only that FC is a fraud. At best, a cruel joke on desperate parents. At worst, a tool for overzealous prosecutors. And for them,
It's been both.
It made absolutely no sense. It wasn't going to work, and it didn't work.
But the prosecutors are relentless. The case drags on for another month before they finally announce they are dropping the charges.
The prosecutor's office ever come forward and say this was wrong?
No. There's never been an acknowledgement that, you know, we shouldn't have done this or we should have had more evidence. It's always been, some excuse.
The Wendros are devastated by the ordeal. But after fearing they would be torn apart forever, there's at least the comfort of being reunited.
I was euphoric. I mean, it was just, thank God I've got my children back.
So is it over?
For us, emotionally, no.
How long did it take, or is it still taking, for the family to be what it was?
The family will never be what it was.
The bad thing was that she was clearly traumatized by it, and we have no way of knowing how, to what extent, and how to fix that.
For 6 months, Julian says Aislinn would get frantic if he was out of her sight for long. Ian, who endured that harrowing police interrogation, was deeply troubled, too.
I was mad at what they had tried to do. I went to bed once from nightmares I had because of it. I started going to see a therapist because they had done a really good number on my head.
With the damage done to their reputations and relationships, the Wendros filed suit against the police, the prosecutors, the school district, and the state agencies involved in the case. All told, 61 different counts of alleged misconduct.
And now you realize what's been going on in your house.
Before it ever gets to court, the police department responsible for Ian's interview settles, admitting no wrongdoing, but agreeing to pay $1.8 million.
I have all the kids I talk to not to make stuff up or pretend.
But the prosecutor's office is defiant. Gorsica insists he did nothing wrong. And on top of that, his office is immune from liability because it was just doing its job as mandated by law.
How can they be immune in this situation?
There's a legal body of case law out there that says, as long as you're wearing your prosecutor hat, you can say and do anything and you're protected.
There's no standard of reasonable behavior?
Yes, there is a standard, and we think they've crossed it, and that's what our lawsuit is all about.
But even though the federal judge hearing that suit called the entire investigation a runaway train, he accepted most of those immunity claims and dismissed most of Gordon's charges. To date, the prosecutor has been able to walk between the raindrops. In this National Law Journal article, Gorsica was asked if he thought the Wendros at least deserved an apology. His response, over my dead body.
Hey, officers, how you doing? First Cuomo with ABC News.
It seems Gorsica should answer some questions, but when we tried to speak with him, he called the cops, saying he was concerned when he realized he was being followed.
Gorsica called you, though, right?
Yeah. If you get him to talk to you, you get him to talk to you.
So we tried calling him from outside the building where he is now in private practice.
So you don't want to come outside and address this yourself?
But knowing who we were didn't help the situation.
With all due respect, Mr. Gorsica, we tried very hard to get you to do it the nice way. You didn't do it. That's why I'm here.
Nevertheless, Gorsica refused to do an interview, citing ongoing litigation.
Ms. Scarsella?
As for Cindy Scarsella, the facilitator responsible for all those accusations,
I'm Chris Cuomo from ABC News.
She now works in a clothing store at a mall. We went there to see if she would share her perspective.
I don't want to chase you, Ms. Scarsella, but I want to ask you about the Wendros case.
But as you can see, no dice.
So for this family trying to figure out how to get their life back, it comes down to what happened with you and their daughter. That's why it's so important.
But not important enough to Scarsella, who just drives away.
It would make a big difference to the family. You can help this family.
You need an apology?
I would like an apology, but what I would really like is for the system to be fixed. I don't want this to happen to anybody else. Somebody can say something, can misconstrue, can make an allegation. And before you blink, you are in a cauldron of chaos.
As they await their day in court on the claims the judge let stand, the Wendros say their lives will never be the same. The stain of the allegation is like a scarlet letter that never really goes away.
I said that maybe I'm oversensitive. I don't know.
do they have to chunk out of our lives? It's irrevocable, it's irreplaceable. You can't put it back.
And that's pretty much the story, ladies and gentlemen. They definitely, for this family, you know, as they said, it was a scarlet letter. And that's pretty much what it is. It's a scarlet letter. You've been accused, so you spend the rest of your life having to deal with that accusation, those wandering eyes. As I said in my CNN interview, that wandering eye, what if they did? Because once you've been accused, you spend the rest of your life trying to clear those allegations up. And, you know, the father in this case, who said something interesting, Mary, he says he never wants that to happen to anybody. He never wants anyone to have to go through this again. He doesn't want anybody to have to go through this again, that all it takes is an accusation and the world comes crashing down on you. And I say that because I dealt with it. So I understand. I mean, I really empathize. Watch this. And if I may be so bold, when I watched this and I watched the interview with that 13-year-old boy, literally, I started crying. I couldn't help myself.
I welled up too, especially when the mom said that she had to hang the phone up because she was too scared to take any risk of never, ever being able to see her children ever again.
You know, it's you're rocked by something like this in such a way, and that's why, you know, we did, you know, we're doing the story now because that, you know, I had to deal with it, but it compelled us. I mean, we were sort of like going, I think everybody, we were all saying the same thing. Wow.
the biggest thing to me is this has been going on. There have been several cases in which the father was accused, or the father and the brother, or father and son, if you want to use it that way, were accused through facilitated communication of molesting or sexually abusing their daughters and sisters. And none of those cases nobody's ever won any of those cases. And right. I mean, this in the 90s, I believe it was the 90s, there was like a rash of cases that were going on because facilitated communication was being, you know, was a big deal, and
right,
these
being
parents,
used. It was being used.
Yeah, and but it's been used, and it's always been unproved that it was a valid way of communication for these autistic children or whoever or anybody else that they're using it for. So after, I mean, knowing the history on it, why would these prosecutors then turn around and do the same thing to this family that happened to, let's say, the Wheaton, you know, in the Wheaton case?
Right.
I don't get it. I mean, haven't you all learned from anyone else's mistakes?
Right. You're absolutely right. James is on the line. James, we've got a minute and a half. If you want to chime in, what do you think?
Well, what I think is, first and foremost, well, since I only got the minute and a half, and even though I have many things to say about this case, I do think one thing comes out to me glaringly. It's the fact that the accusation, it's being said that the accusation came from the child.
Right.
That's not true.
Right.
That's not
You're
true.
You're right.
The
accusation
came from the facilitator.
That's right.
And it's very telling that even the facilitator, because her name has not been mentioned at all. They just keep saying FC. This is a woman who led a child into an accusation. But they're saying it seems that everyone else is saying that, well, it's a false accusation from the child. That's not the case. That's not the case at all.
Right. You're absolutely right. We'll come back at the top of the hour. We'll wrap this up. Kool-Aid Man, James Montgomery, is on the line. It is time for Kool-Aid. when we return. It's Reese on the Radio. Don't worry, we're going to lighten it up. We just really wanted to talk about this because it was an important issue, and we cover the important issues as well as have some fun, too, on Reese on the Radio. The number is 347-308-8701. Tell your friends. Get on the line right now and give your opinion. It's Reese on the Radio.
Prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Do you want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our times.
Then grab it! Grab it!
Mary had a little lamb, it was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said nada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you. Reese.
All right, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio. We're talking about the fake phony facilitated communication that rocked this family. We've got definitely more stories to talk about today, but this was such a compelling story that we had. It was one of those things that I don't know. I find it odd that this is happening in this day and age with the criminal prosecution system that doesn't do its due diligence in finding out information, and even when it does, it still pursues certain cases. James and Mary, of course, are here. When I look at this entire case, especially as you guys know, the stuff that you know I had to go through, and I'm, again, this isn't about me and what it is that I went through, but how similar that is, that the prosecutor went through such a lengthy process to indict this family, regardless of everything that turned them away from what would even deem as being factual. That being said, the OBGYN or the GYN that they did on an autistic girl and found out that she had not been penetrated. There was no acute damage of the vagina. I have to emphasize.
I think it shouldn't have went that far.
But they did. But they did.
Well, first,
they're looking for evidence to prove that this happened. They're
right.
Looking. And if a girl is saying that she was molested, she types. If they believe the facilitator, if they believe what it is the facilitator says that this girl typed out, and then you do forensic work by having her go to a gynecologist and you find nothing, she said that she was penetrated by her dad and he was kissing her. And then you find out that there's no damage done to the vagina. How do you not vet this and saying, well, she says she was penetrated, but there's no damage? That would make you go, something's holding up and up. But
something's not adding up. We need to check this out.
Yeah,
we need to do a little more. Frankly, to answer your question, okay, it's the fact that, again, it's the accusation alone. And the prosecutions are not, well, the prosecutor's office is not there to investigate. They are there to get convictions, period.
Exactly.
So,
they're there to prosecute.
Right.
They're there to prosecute. So by the time you get to that instance in the case, by the time it gets to them, they're thinking, well, okay, we got our man. We just have to prove it to a jury.
Right.
They're not there to investigate whether it's right or wrong. They're just right. there, okay, this is a guy we want. We need to get a win.
Right. James, you are absolutely right. The prosecutor's office is not in the business of investigating crimes to deem whether or not the charged is innocent. Beyond a reasonable doubt, they're there to prove that he's guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. They
mm-hmm.
have a focal point. They have a focus. How do we find him guilty?
It's their mission plan.
Right. It's in their mission statement. How do we find them guilty? Even though the law says they uphold the law and find justice for all people, even the accused.
This is the problem with our justice system today.
Yeah, but our
Actually, it's not the problem with that's not the problem with the justice system. The justice system is the problem that it says that you are innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
However, more often than not, you're guilty until proven innocent.
In the prosecutor's office. In the prosecutor's office.
Prosecutor's office, because it's not their job. It's your defense attorney.
Right.
Attorney does his job well, then they say, oh, well, you know, we did our job, but it's somebody else's problem.
James, it's not the job of the district attorney's office to find you guilty. That is not the law. The law says that if the person
right.
is not guilty, we should not pursue the charges. If the evidence proves that the defendant is innocent, we must back off and not indict. But they do not do that. They pressure themselves.
Right.
Get an indictment.
Get an indictment. Get it any way possible. But so, again, which just leads me into what I'm about to say, when do they ever do that? All right? Frankly, they come in thinking this is the guy. You're guilty.
Right.
I just need to get the conviction. Doesn't matter anymore whether you're guilty or innocent. You're in front of me. I need to present you in the worst way possible so I can get my victory. I can get my W.
And the more W's and more victories you get, the more votes you get when it comes time to vote you back into that position or to vote
right,
you
exactly,
into a higher position.
Right, exactly. In other words, you go to your office, and this is sort of the template of the prosecutor's office as a job. Any job that you work at, I want you to look at this as a guy who works at a regular office. Let's say a guy who's a sales rep. He's a sales rep. He has the most clients. He gets the most revenue for the company. He gets the most accounts. He billed the most amount of money. He can go to his bosses and go, hey, look, I billed this amount. I billed that amount. I brought the company $500 million, $600 million. I can get a raise. I can move up in the business. And I move from
being a partner.
Right. I can move up to be a partner. I can move to be an associate. Whatever the case is, doing it so he can move his, as you said, James, his political position inside the office, he can bump himself up not only in position but in pay. And if a prosecutor is working a case where he can move up the ladder, his job, if he was a prosecutor that says, now this doesn't look like the person did it, we got to let him go, he's never going to get that bump in pay or that bump in position. It's yeah. not the temp.
How sad is that? How sad is it that if you uphold the law and if you only, you know, if some people get off because they're not guilty and they, you know, because we all know that people are making false accusations all the time, every day. So that's very sad that if you uphold the law, that you can't even uphold the law, what the true law is, because you have a personal there's something personal there that you need to gain for you.
Well, you have to meet
How
a quota.
How sad is that?
Well, you have to meet a quota. Your job as a prosecutor is you have to meet a quota. You get promoted by how many convictions?
But it shouldn't be that way. It should not be that way.
But even our police department works that way.
In that vein, as you said, Reese, you know, the letter of the law says that you have to prove this man guilty. Everyone knows that. But how often does that actually happen?
You're absolutely right. They're not doing
their
job.
Well, it does happen often, but it happens often to a lot of innocent people. That's the problem.
But they're not doing their job as litigators, and especially as the district attorney's office. What they're not doing as sort of officers of the law, and that's what they are, officers of the law. They're not in the business of getting the facts and making sure that someone isn't wrongfully convicted. They're in the business of conviction.
Mm-hmm.
You get my meaning? It's like they're in the business of conviction, not in the business of the law and abiding by it and making sure innocent people don't get arrested and that innocent people don't get prosecuted and innocent people don't get convicted. They're in the business of conviction. I don't want – no office should have – they shouldn't be in a position where they say, I'm going to make sure that this guy gets convicted no matter what. No matter what the case is, I'm going to make sure that this guy gets convicted. If it's found out in their office, the prosecutor's office, if it's found out that you are trying to get to the and you might believe, you know what, this doesn't seem right, something fishy. And you start letting people off, and you've got no convictions, you've got, you know, five convictions.
You're not going to have your job for very long.
Exactly. You're not going to have your job because we're in the job of convictions. And you get promoted based on how many times you put a guy in jail and how many years you got him.
Mm-hmm. But it is so inhumane to work off of that basis, especially when it comes to the law. And prosecuting innocent people. There was a man, and I think it was in Oklahoma or somewhere in the West, there was a man that actually was, he was a facilitated, he was accused of his daughter, his autistic daughter, accused, they used facilitated communication. No, I do apologize. I stand corrected. He was actually a teacher at the school that this young girl was going to. He was using the facilitated communication with her. She accused him somehow, some way of sexual abuse, and they convicted him, and that conviction was upheld even though they later found that facilitated communication was a hoax to them.
Mm-hmm.
And he still remained in prison.
There was a case where just recently where a man was, I forget his name, and I'm so sorry I did.
No, okay.
But where he was executed.
Wow.
Just recently a man was executed, and because of false imprisonment. He didn't do the case.
Are you talking about the guy that later, you know, he had been imprisoned all this time for several years,
mm-hmm.
and they were trying to
get a stay. And then the witnesses recanted.
The witnesses recanted their stories, and they would not give him a stay of execution, I think is what
it
is.
They wouldn't give him a stay. He was actually executed.
Yeah, he was. I cried. That brought me to tears because it is just another sad case of
undeath. We got our guy. We did our job.
Right.
If he was innocent, too late now. Oops.
Well, and you're right, because what this has turned into is that prosecuting has turned into a business.
Mm-hmm.
That's what is hurting our criminal justice system, is that it's turned into a business of conviction. A business of conviction. You get your promotion. You get your raise.
Like you're doing something without actually doing it.
Yeah, we're going to we get our raises, we get our promotions, we get our credos. We get our one up our one ups, whatever it is. We get our recognition by how many people we put behind bars, how many years we put them behind bars, and how we destroy this individual. And it's not about justice. It's just about numbers. And that's
but
where...
But how do you sleep at night knowing that that is what you're doing?
You get
a
paycheck.
You
Mary,
sleep
you
on
get
a,
you know what? I don't
a
care.
Double
wait
king
a minute.
Size
wait
bed
a minute. I don't care how much you're paying
that has
me.
A 300 thread count.
Yeah. No, that's Mary. James is absolutely right. You sleep.
I understand it, but for me personally, I don't care how much you are paying me. I don't. It does not matter to me how much you are paying me.
There's
if
no more.
I am knowingly doing something that is hurting someone else to any level. I'm not in it. I'm out.
Mary, there's no morality in this business. When you go into that prosecutor's office to get a job and you start
but there
working
has
for
to, but there should be morality in the business. There has to be morality in the business because you are dealing with people's livelihood. You are dealing with everything. I mean,
I'm glad you said that.
You tarnish people's reputations. You rip families apart.
Mary, yeah. I'm glad you said that. Listen to this. Remember what we're dealing with. What we consider prosecutors or police officers, I want you to look at this in this particular respect, and I want you to respond to what it is I'm about to tell you. Listen to what I say, and I want to hear your response after I tell you this. If you're a prosecutor and you see 150 cases a month, you see 150 names, 150 accusations. Everybody, you go in there and you prosecute. Every day is a new prosecution. Every day is a new allegation. Every day is a new charge. After a while, people don't exist. It's just a case.
Mm-hmm.
And you separate. Exactly. You separate yourself from the individuality of each person who's in front of you. They all become a number, as James just said. They all become a number. And the minutiae of who it is that you are as an individual is obsolete. It's diminished. Because
Go ahead.
After a while, your prosecution is a face in a crowd. You understand what I'm saying? Your prosecution is a face in the crowd. You're 150.
That's when you need to go into a different business. When it gets to that point, that's just like saying in healthcare, how many kids come into the ER that have been shot, or how many people die in the ER every day. Well, when you're just looking at each individual as a number. It's time for you to find a new profession. It's time for you to get out when you have lost.
But you have to. You have to. But you have to separate yourself. No. But see.
But you have to. Now I see. I do agree with you somewhat, Mary. But I also agree with Reese because, and I'm playing devil's advocate here. It's almost like you have to divorce yourself from certain things.
You took the word. You took the exact word. That's what it is. You divorce yourself from individuality, and they all become a face in the crowd. They all just become faces. They're not people. They're not even human to you. They're just shit.
However, but
well,
when
if everybody
when
keeps
it,
looking
when
at things that way,
so jaded, when you become
Mary, I'm sorry.
So jaded, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mary.
If everybody is going to look at it, and I understand, I do understand your point on things, Reese and Jamie. I understand both of you, but when it comes to that point, when do we say enough is enough? When are things ever going to change?
It's never. You're absolutely right. It's never going to change because that system of justice can't change because those people know that they're not going to pursue a better career for themselves or a better lives for themselves if they start to become what it is that you described as being human. Let's take a call, 347-308-8701. Trish, you're on the line with Teresa on the radio.
Hey.
Hey, how are you doing, Trish?
Good.
Back.
But the problem being is that people don't look at it as the people prosecuting this. They get bonuses every time they get a conviction, even if it's on a lesser charge.
Right.
Whether you're guilty or not, there's money going in their pocket for convicting you. And that's exactly what we're talking about. Money rules the world. And as long as they're getting bonuses for it, they're not going to quit. They don't care if you're innocent or guilty.
But there's money for them.
I
disagree here.
Well, go ahead,
I know where I live in Alabama, I know that they get a bonus every time somebody's convicted. They get an extra bonus in their paycheck. Why would I not want to convict you if I was getting a paycheck for it? I mean,
if you think about it from that level,
you know, money is, and it's a very true statement, money's the root of all evil. If you're going to pay me an extra X amount of dollars for convicting you, why do I want to look at anything that's going to prove you're innocent?
Well, you're right. I will admit that is clearly, and I believe that is a motivator for these prosecutors to pursue these cases, no matter how outlandish they are. Because if you can get something out of it, you're going to do it. But James, you said you don't agree with that.
Well, not totally, because it does tend to demonize every prosecutor out there. Okay, not everyone is so politically and monetarily motivated. There are guys who really think that, really believe that this is where they take a stand. You know, they think they're holding up the law.
All right,
I don't want to demonize every prosecutor out. You know, I don't want to make it into a whole class where every prosecutor is just out to get to make DA or make mayor or whatever. However, it's just that the ambition and the drive to do so can tend to blind you to the facts.
I agree with what James just said. That motivation can blind you. Some prosecutors go into this with blinders on, and I agree with that. They do go with this with blinders on. In fact, as the report that we played earlier, Trisha, and I don't know whether or not you heard earlier.
I didn't. I was getting off work when it started, so I missed some of it.
But one, the lawyer for the family in this particular case said that this prosecutor's office never met a child who wasn't abused. And that was sort of the zeitgeist in that office, that was how they felt, that every child who says that they're abused, we believe them. And we don't vet them in any way. We don't think that, you know, we don't follow the facts. If things seem inconsistent, we don't follow that. Even if it sounds inconsistent, let's find a way that we can brush over that or jump over that, or leap over that, or disregard it entirely, and still make a case. And
now, see, when a child says they're abused, yes, your first thing is you believe the child. But then you go back and you look. Because there are parents that pit them against each other for custody or money or whatever. You have to go back and actually look at the evidence and make sure that this child's not being fed stories. Because
you
can tell a child. You can tell a child enough that it happens that they'll believe it.
Trish, do you know that in most cases of divorce that involve children, that mothers, over 50% of mothers in divorce cases, have used child sexual abuse?
Mm-hmm.
As a tactic to attack the husband and to get custody. And,
oh, I believe it. I've seen it.
No, exactly. They do this. It's often.
And those women should be prosecuted.
But they're not.
Those are the people they should be prosecuting.
Look, as I said on the first day of our show, what they've done to girls who have made false rape claims, Heidi Jones, the nun in Brooklyn, Domnell in Donye. Danielle and
Dominic. Go back 20 years to Tawana
Falls. And the FC today. And the FC in this case, which is another point I wanted to make. You notice how she seems to be protected.
Yes, they protected her.
They're protecting her because they don't even put her name out. It's just VFC. Here's
well,
a
no,
woman
her who, name. Her name is Cindy Scarsella. That is her name. Her
okay.
name is Cindy
okay,
Scarsella.
Right. But you're right, Mary. They did mention her name, but that case with Domnell and Donye in Harlem, who accused those four boys at Hofstra, well, five boys in a Hofstra University of raping her. They found out that she lied about it because the fifth boy took a videotape on his camera phone of the sex act, and they showed that she was participant in it. She only got 6 months therapy. She got 6 months therapy, and the boys were arrested, and all four of them got $250,000 bails, and they were placed in jail, and they couldn't make those bails. Look at Heidi Jones, the weather woman from ABC, WABC in New York. She got 9 days of community service. You know, the nun in Brooklyn, she was a nun. She covered up a sexual liaison with a young man who worked at a bodega by saying that a toothless black man who weighed 280 pounds. I'm dead serious. And she got nothing for it. And the police do not. Bjorny Gonzalez, who put William McCaffrey in jail for 25 years. He served 4 years before she came forward. He served 4 years. She got a year for perjury. I mean, he was going to spend 25 years in jail, and she only got a year for perjury. So these false.
But that's the problem.
Of
that
course.
Is the problem. It's that they do not make.
Because.
You know what? If you falsely accuse somebody of rape and they say they've been convicted, okay, this dude's getting 25 years for a rape he didn't commit. When it comes back out you're lying, your behind should be doing the 25 years. Sorry.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
See how it feels.
You should do the time.
Because no matter what, this guy's life is ruined.
Right.
Nobody's ever going to believe he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So what chance does he have at a decent job, a decent career, finding a decent woman, anything? That is gone for him at that point.
No one's going to take the time to ask him, well, did you do it? Or,
right.
You know, it's just the accusation. That is hanging over your head.
But
sure.
As a public,
no one's
we don't care whether you did it. We
right.
care that
right.
you've been accused of it. Now, we're afraid of you because you've been accused of it.
Trish, mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. How many kids do you have? Do you have two? You have three? I mean, how many kids do you have?
I have three boys.
Okay, so let me ask you this. If one boy, and this is what the criminal justice system has diminished itself to, and I equate it to a mother or father who has multiple children. If Timmy walks into the room and says, "Mommy, Johnny hit me," most parents do exactly this, and this is what the criminal justice system does. They go to Johnny, and they say, "Johnny, did you do it?" They don't vet Timmy. They don't vet whether or not Timmy is telling the truth. They go, "Timmy, he hit you. Where did he hit you? When did he hit you? You say he hit you? Do you have a bruise? Do you have something to prove it?" You immediately believe the child. And
of course. But now, taking it that step farther, though, that parent will go to Timmy's brother. Let's call him Jimmy. Hey,
yeah,
Jimmy,
yeah.
I just heard you hit Timmy. Right? Did you do it? Well, and then you listen to Jimmy as well.
But
so
we,
you can't really equate that because
our criminal system,
we as parents will at least listen to both sides.
But our criminal
the justice
system just
does
like
not.
That. No, the justice system says somebody accuses you, go to the person accused. We don't vet the accuser. Break down what happened. Tell me what happened. And we don't vet that, and we don't scrutinize it properly. It's in rape cases, and I'm saying this in rape cases or sexual abuse cases, the police department doesn't do that. And I'll tell you why. Because they're forced by a lobby. There is a lobby that says that all sexual abuse claims must be treated with veracity, with veracity, even if they're outlandish. There's a man in prison right now doing 25 years because the girl said she was raped on a spaceship by him. A spaceship.
But unfortunately, those accusations fly every day.
Say again?
It doesn't matter. Unfortunately, those accusations go every day, and it doesn't matter what state you are in, what culture you are, what color you are, what credence or what religion. They do it every
and
day
it
to
shouldn't.
People. No, they shouldn't be allowed to get away with it.
It's the only, it's the only charge. If you got murder, if you got robbery, if you got assault, the police will vet the investigation and vet the accusation to the fullest. But when it comes to sexual claims, it's arrest first and ask questions later.
That's why there are so many false accusations.
No, it's okay. You made a valid point. We got to go. If we got to talk about some new stuff, James Montgomery's on the phone. Kool-Aid Man is here. We're going to talk about the Obama White House covering up an Alice in Wonderland party? I don't even know what that is.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer, Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby, twinkle, twinkle.
It's Reese on the Radio. We're back. And I knew that we were going to have an extensive conversation about this report. And it's something that I found important. Everybody's on the line. The whole team is here. JC is on the line. We've got Trish calling in from Alabama. Alabama! By the way, congratulations on the win, by the way. You guys won the BCS championship, Alabama. You guys beat LSU. I didn't think you'd do it. But the Crimson Tide, I hate that term. Do you know that there are some women referring to the Crimson Tide as their monthly? I can't believe I'm telling you that. I had a girlfriend who actually referred to her monthly as the Crimson Tide. Well, not that I need to share that with you, but I figured I would. It's Reese on the Radio, the number 347-888. Log on to the show, and as well, log on to blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio to listen to archives of the show and anything else and give us your opinions. And email me if you can, or if you'd like, if you want to hate. And I love to hate. Love it. It's Reese on the Radio at yahoo.com. So, James Montgomery, our resident Kool-Aid man, is here. And he's here because, you know, he is such a ardent supporter of the Barack Obama administration.
Oh, yeah.
He is what I call the Kool-Aid man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's my man, James Montgomery. James, what's up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And not just oh, yeah, but hell yeah. What's up, Ruth?
Well, listen, here's the bottom line. So, look, there's this report, this book that came out by a New York Times reporter. And, throw everybody else in here on the story. There's a report that Barack Obama had this private party on Halloween 2009. And on this party in 2009, he had Tim Burton and Johnny Depp and the cast of the movie at the time, Alice in Wonderland, at the party. Now, mm-hmm. In this woman's book, it suggested that the White House staff did not want this elaborate private Halloween party to get out to the press because the country was going through a recession and thought that any reports of this story might seem insensitive and that they didn't want to get out to the press. So Soledad O'Brien from CNN did a report a day ago pretty much excoriating the New York Times reporter for writing this piece. So I want you to hear not the report. It's not about the Obama administration and a scandal. I want you to hear what Soledad O'Brien says about the reporter, and listen to the tone, Kool-Aid Man. Listen to the tone of the report.
It is time to get real this morning. There's a new book coming out this week. You probably read a little bit about it. It's written by New York Times reporter Jody Kantor and claims to reveal all the hidden secrets of the Obama administration. Among them, an Alice in Wonderland Tea Party-themed Halloween party back in 2009 that she claims the White House felt was so rife with Hollywood rife, I think that word is English. Rife with Hollywood glamour at a time when Americans were suffering that the White House wanted to keep it a secret. This is what she's claiming in her book. It was designed by Tim Burton at the same time his movie, very over-the-top movie, was being released. It was attended by the Mad Hatter himself, Johnny Depp, and the original Chewbacca from Star Wars was sent by George Lucas to entertain the guests. Big over-the-top party. So according to this book, this is what Jody Kantor writes. Quote, White House officials are so nervous about how a splashy Hollywood-esque party would look to jobless Americans that the event was not discussed publicly, and Burton and Depp's contributions went unacknowledged. Well, not really. You take a look at, and it's not hard, with a Google search, you can find that CNN covered the party, NBC covered the party, Reuters covered the party, the Associated Press covered the party, USA Today covered the party, and the Chicago Sun-Times also covered the very, very top secret party. We asked the White House if they tried to keep it a secret. They said, well, not really. There's a video of the party on our official White House website. Take a look at that. Johnny Depp's fan site had a post about his appearance at the party. So for a secret keeping of this White House Halloween party with Hollywood celebs, not so secret. Maybe it wasn't a secret at all, Ms. Kantor. You might want to get real on that.
Now listen to what it is that
she said. It is time to get real this morning.
This is the important part about this article. Now, she says that the party was covered by CNN, Reuters, Associated Press, the Chicago Sun-Times. She names all of these people. The party was covered. Then she goes, and I'll play it for you again if you didn't hear it because I heard it. She says, She says, Johnny Depp's fan site says that Johnny Depp attended the party. She doesn't say that CNN, AP, Reuters all reported that Johnny Depp attended the party. The truth of the matter is that the Halloween party, which is covered by the press every year by every president, was reported by the press. They go there to see the kids get Halloween candy, and they see the whole festivity, the cobwebs, and everybody's dressed
right.
In costumes.
Just like Easter and Christmas.
Right. Easter and Christmas. But the private party where Johnny Depp and Tim Burton, the director of Alice in Wonderland, attended a private where the entire theme was this Alice in Wonderland was not covered by the press. No cameras were even there. Soledad O'Brien does not in any way show that party. She only shows the outside where everyone attended the regular Halloween party. They don't show any Halloween themed stuff that Tim Burton and Johnny Depp were there. The only reported Johnny Depp being there was Johnny Depp's website. Now,
and who's following that?
Why is the press so upset at Jody's report that they didn't cover the case? Why they didn't cover the party that happened with Tim Burton? Why are they upset? Come on, cool.
They have
problems.
Well, frankly, okay. So you're telling me first I'm gonna get something straight because it doesn't seem.
What the hell is that? Is somebody grinding something?
I have no idea.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All right. Well, now, so you're saying there were two different parties?
Yes, there was. There was a regular party that was covered by the press where kids were picking up candy, and Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, Malia, and Sasha were standing out handing out Halloween candy to the kids who had showed up at the White House. Then there was a private event where inside the party, now, I waited to tell you this, James, inside the party where there were military family members, that there were people dressed up in character, Johnny Depp as the Mad Hatter, as he plays in the film. There were blood vials filled with fruit punch. It was an exclusive party in behind the scenes that was all the
like
Hollywood.
Like an after party. This all happened on the same night?
This all
happened on the same night.
Thank you, Mary. It all happened on the same night. Press only covered the public event, but the private Hollywood event was covered up so badly that Johnny Depp and Tim Burton don't even show up on the White House dossier. The only reported was his fan site. So what I'm asking you is that here is Soledad O'Brien suggesting that it wasn't supported, I mean, that it wasn't reported on, or pardon me, this is a report.
That it was reported.
Exactly. The reporter from the New York Times who wrote the book, The Obamas, says it wasn't reported on, and Soledad O'Brien excoriating this reporter and saying, yes, it was, but she's not telling the truth. The second part of the party wasn't covered, and there's no video to suggest it.
Okay. All right, so basically, All right, so basically they're just saying, all right, so they got scooped because they didn't find out about the after party.
Well, the press knew, everybody knew about the after party. They just did not do, there was no one else knew. The press, I think what they said was the press was asked to keep it on a hush because it was going to be looked at in not a so great fashion because of the economic downturn that the country was in at the time.
Very good, Mary. Very good, Mary. Very strongly articulated. That was that the Obama administration said, as she quoted in her book, she said that keep it on the hush. The White House people said keep it on the hush. The country might not look at it favorably that we had an extravagant party where we brought in Tim Burton and Johnny.
Don't forget about that's probably my sister telling my nephew that he can call in. I'm sorry. I told him to call. He could use his phone and call in if he wanted to.
Does your nephew have an opinion?
Oh, I'm sure that Barack Obama always got an opinion.
Hold on. Does he have an opinion?
Do you have an opinion on this mess? Do you want to talk on my phone?
No, I don't want to get in.
He said no because he's not even going to get in it because he is such a big Barack supporter. He knows him, and I'll be going toe-to-toe before the night's over.
Whoa. I want him on the phone.
Take your cell phone and go call him. The number's up there. Go call. Because this way we can all discuss it. Go call.
He had a private party.
He's calling.
Good. He's calling
James,
in.
Did
good.
You just, yeah, he's getting
James,
his phone now.
Did you
my grandson
what?
Was playing with it.
Wait, what? Excuse me, guys.
Yeah, he was like, so what? There's nothing wrong with it.
Hold on. JC, when he calls, you make sure that you put him on that line.
His name is Justin.
Justin? Fine. I want Justin on the phone, and I want to talk to him exclusively. Kool-Aid Man, you're saying private
call
party.
Call, we're waiting on you.
Let me tell you this. Bottom line, James, you private party. There's
tell him who you are, yes. Tell him who you are.
There's nothing private in the White House. Nothing private in the White House. It's a public place. It's the people's house. There is no private party.
Is or is not the President of the United States a human being?
What the hell does that got to do with anything, James?
What does that have to do with anything is because whether he's the president or not, whether it's been in the White House or not, there should be a time where he can have a time to himself and his family. The man has the influence and the money where he can have, you know, and I'm sure it was because, you know, his kids liked Alice in Wonderland. Okay.
Change.
Well,
it wasn't.
Yeah.
Change.
Okay, but wait a minute. They not only did they. Okay, so you could have had an Alice in Wonderland theme party. Did you have to have Johnny Depp there? Did you have to bring the original?
Did
Chewbacca?
You have to have? Why not? If you can afford it, why not?
Because the rest it's of the because the rest of the world, the rest of the world is eating oodles of noodles. That's why.
The rest of
Mary,
the world is eating oodles of noodles. Yes.
Whoa.
Okay.
Hold on.
Right.
Hold on.
You know what? Not all the rest of the world is eating oodles of noodles. Johnny Depp isn't.
Hold on, James.
Yeah.
Okay.
James,
Tim Burton
James,
isn't.
Let me, James, listen. I'm gonna cut you off for a quick second. Let's take Justin. Hey, Justin, how are you?
Good.
Justin, listen. On the at this party, my question is this. What was the press covering for the President of the United States? Why were you doing that? Justin?
Yeah, let me say something here. I didn't know what she even said. It's breaking up.
Okay, I said, why is the White House covering up, or why is the press covering up for Barack Obama and this party? It's a public party because it's in the White House, and it is a public party. It's a public party. But why did he make it secretive? That's my question.
I don't know.
So you don't think...
I don't know what the big deal is. I think they just told me some people won't know, but everybody should already know, and it should be out in the public somewhere.
Right, but it wasn't, Justin. It wasn't in the public, and the press kept it out of the public. And this woman who wrote a book who told the story, now they're defending the president by saying that we covered the party, but they know they didn't. They didn't cover the whole party. They covered the regular Halloween festivities, but they didn't cover the Johnny Depp, Tim Burton party that was elaborate and Hollywood themed. They didn't cover it. You never heard about this party until today.
Right.
And it happened in 2009. If Johnny Depp was at the White House in a Mad Hatter outfit from his movie,
I don't know.
But you would have known about it, wouldn't you have? Johnny Depp showed up at the White House dressed as Mad Hatter for Halloween, and it didn't make the public, it didn't make news?
Well, no, because we probably paid for it.
Well, exactly. There you go, Justin. We paid for it. The American paid for it.
No, without her. Wasn't me.
But no, I'm telling you, Justin, we paid for it. You're a supporter of Barack Obama, is that it?
Yeah.
Why do you support him, sir?
Because he has more intelligence to be in office than anybody else.
Really?
That's my opinion. It may not be yours, it may not be nobody else, but it's mine.
Okay, so prove to me that he has that intelligence. Because he went to Harvard?
Well, no. But he goes in office and look, every other president we've had won't put us in debt. He's trying to get us out of debt. And you know, he's doing what he has to do to
Justin,
get our country back to where it was.
Justin, George W. Bush spent $4.5 trillion in 8 years. Okay? He spent $4.5 trillion in 8 years.
Okay.
Do you know that Barack Obama spent more than that in two?
Well,
in two.
But.
Whoa. You said other presidents have put us in debt. George W. $4.5 trillion in 4 years. Barack Obama did those same numbers and greater than in 2 years.
You're right, but he is using this money differently than everybody else. He wants to use it on good things. You know what I mean? Not what George Bush would have spent it on. You know, he goes out there and wants to do this, this, and this. Barack Obama's going to do what he has to do.
What's a good thing?
To get us back.
So what's a good thing? What's a good thing he spent that money on?
Us back.
99 weeks of unemployment? That's a good thing?
Well, no, that ain't, but...
Okay, well, that's what he spent. How about $800 billion on a stimulus package that was supposed to keep us from reaching 8% unemployment, and it reached 10.1%? Was that a good thing that he did?
What? No, that wasn't.
George W. Bush, in years, remember, the Afghanistan war started in December 2009. Iraq war started in March or May of 2000. And until he left office, he spent $797 billion on two wars. One started in the end of 2001. Another one in May of 2003, and when he left office, he had spent $797 billion. Barack Obama became president in January of 2009, and by February, he spent $804 billion in a month. You tell me that this man is a better president than George W. Bush?
In my opinion, he is.
Whoa. Numbers. If you like Jay-Z, Jay-Z said, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. So you're talking about a deficit that your president, the man that you respect, spent more money in a month than George W. Bush did in 6 years.
Well, no.
Justin, come on, man. You can take...
Justin, I can't help you out on this one.
You're the kind of guy that can honestly admit when you're wrong. I know that about you. I see it in you. I feel it in you. Say it.
But I can say that I'm right. Because name me somebody right now that is running for president. You think go in there and do better than Barack Obama?
Any one of them.
Name me through these people that are running right now, name Republican, that can go in there and do better.
Justin, do you know who Newt Gingrich is?
Yeah. I know who he is.
Do you know that Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House during the Clinton administration?
I knew that too, but...
So hold on. Clinton balanced the budget. He got more people off welfare and into the workforce, didn't he?
Yes, but what's Barack Obama doing? He's making more jobs. Whoa.
Justin, stick with the issue. When Clinton was president of the United States, he balanced the budget 3 times, and he got more people off and into the workforce. Do you want to know who implemented that protocol during Clinton's White House administration? It was Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich balanced the budget 3 times. He was the one who initiated workfare, and Bill Clinton vetoed it twice because he said we shouldn't force those people to work. He vetoed people getting off welfare and getting into the workforce. Newt Gingrich had to force the House to pass a 2/3 vote to overthrow the veto. Newt Gingrich balanced the budget. Newt Gingrich gave us the surplus that George W. Bush then totally washed away. So when you talk about the truth, and that's what I'm here to do, Newt Gingrich was responsible for that. Bill Clinton got the credit, but Newt Gingrich, the Speaker of the House, the first Speaker of the House in 40 years, balanced the budget 3 times and got people off welfare and into the workforce. And that administration is credited for something a Republican established. And Newt Gingrich is running for the president of the United States. So when you ask which one of the people who are running for president right now can do the job, there's proof that Newt Gingrich can get it done. He's a proven leader and a proven fiscally responsible leader. You can look it up yourself. Don't take my word for it. Look it up.
But I know you're right because I've heard all that. But now... So you think that he's gonna go in there and actually do all this stuff, balance this budget out just like it is? But now what he's saying right now on TV, because I'm watching him right now. He's talking right now. He may be a good president. I'm not gonna say he ain't, but I'm still gonna go with my word and say Barack Obama's still bad. I mean.
I'm scared of you, Justin. I'm scared of you, and I'm scared of the fact that you have the right to vote. I'm just kidding. But
okay, wait a minute. Let's remember, Justin. How old are you?
Me, 15.
Yeah, 15. Okay, so the fact that you are interested in politics like you are is wonderful, and I commend you for that.
Auntie saving you. Look at your auntie.
Stop it. And I commend you for that. So let's just remember that we are discussing this with someone that is 15, regardless of whether I'm auntie or not.
Oh.
So maybe what I will suggest is that maybe you do some research. Reese has made some valid comments. So do some research on it. I'm not telling you to change your view. I was a Barack Obama supporter myself. So, just do some research and make sure that you're researching the facts. That's the only advice that I can give you.
All right, it's the top of the hour. We're going to the top of the hour. We'll be back. It's Reese on the radio. I'm just having some fun. Thanks for calling, Justin. I appreciate it.
Thank you for calling in, Justin. I love you.
You want to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our time?
Yeah, I think I'd like to be an angry prophet denouncing the hypocrisies of our time.
Then grab it! Grab it!
Mary had a little lamb and Jesus was his soul. And everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said, Naga da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I help send against you.
Reese.
We had a serious show today in the first hour and a half because we were covering that autistic girl through facilitated communication who made allegations against her dad and her family members. And now we're just talking politics because that's what we do. And we talk about everything under the sun right here on Race on the Radio, 347-308-8701. Call and give her opinion if you like. I don't care whether or not you don't like my opinion. It's not what it is that I do. I'm not here for peas. I'm just here to do what it is that I do. What's amazing about what's going on in our country today, and I cut James off because it's Kool-Aid Man time, which is actually settled for Wednesday, and we'll get him back in here. But there's another story that I heard right now that it's going to make a lot of people kind of blush. And in some cases, they might even go, what? Just to give you some background on this story. Here's the deal. So Greece is at the point of bankruptcy. What they do is they, it's a socialist country. They take their money from the rich, they give to the poor. If you go to school, it's paid for. Your school vacation, paid for. Everything you do is paid for by the federal government in Greece. And it's been such a strain on them that now the country is at the verge of bankruptcy. The euro is going to crumble. So a story that flipped me out when I read it today was that legislation was passed recently in Greece just to show that they hadn't learned their lesson, no matter how bad the situation had gotten there, that they had found new disability clauses. Now pay attention to what you're about to hear, because I would be freaked out that these things were considered disability. Now I'm going to type up the punch up the story, because I'm going to give you the breakdown in when I get to it, because I read the story when I was on the train today, and I'm reading it and I'm going, no way, no way. So people are filing with the government for these disabilities. The disabilities are these. Kleptomania is a disability. I can't stop stealing from Kmart. Disability. Pyromania. Yes, that's right. Look it up right now online. If you are by a computer, right now, look it up. Greece is saying that kleptomania and pyromania, I can't stop setting fires and stealing from Kmart, I'm disabled. Cut me a check. But the most appalling of all those on the list, and there are plenty on the list, folks, batten down the hatches. Pedophilia. I'm disabled because I'm a pedophiliac. I have a disability, and I should get cut a check. Can't stop touching little children. Check, please. That's what Greece has proposed. That you can say that you're a pedophiliac and you should get a check. It's a disability. Kleptomania, pyromania, pedophilia, you get cut a check. You're disabled. Don't believe me? Look it up. And don't go to Wikipedia. That's a little scheme. There's a national report on this. It's gotten to the point where we are actually paying people for disabilities that make no damn sense, that don't make a bit of sense. Mary, please, please tell me you heard this story.
I didn't hear a story. I did hear another story here in the States, but I'll get into that in a couple of minutes about other things and disability and pregnancy and so on. But it, so this is going to make people start touching kids and start stealing and start burning things down. Lazy people that don't want to work, they're just going to, I mean, the whole country is going to be, you know, flaming, touching children, stealing everything. It's unbelievable. Like, are you serious?
Yes. This is
everyone. If this was the case in the United States of America, everyone in this country would be out of work.
Yeah. You'd get a disability check for anything. Now it's a disability to be a kleptomaniac, a pyromaniac, a pedophiliac, whatever it means, you get covered under the disability law. This can't be happening.
Who is making these laws up? I mean, who is running? This is in Greece, right?
Yeah, this is in Greece. Now, that's going to happen. You'd have to be a moron to suggest that will happen here. But come on. We've become, see, this is the entitlement society that we've created. Everybody.
Well, now here in the States, I was just reading that, going back to a conversation that we had in reference to women being underpaid because the employer has to make up for the possibility of lost productivity. If a woman gets pregnant, she has to go out on maternity leave.
Right.
Now they are trying to. There was a professor that wrote a paper, and and is trying to get put into law with the ADA, the American Disabilities Association, to list pregnancy as a disability because there was there have been some people that have been fired from their employers because they were pregnant, unable to lift like 10 pounds, even though, you know, something small, even though the employer could have made other arrangements for someone else to have lifted that 10-pound box or whatever, they chose to fire the pregnant woman. So they're trying to get that into the disability, put into the disabilities things here as well. But
you know, you bring a valid point to this argument about the state that we are in as far as disability is concerned. You make a very, very valid point in this story that the entitlement society is spreading like wildfire. Is pregnancy a disability, James? Help me out.
Okay. Pregnancy is not a disability. it's not a disability, and it shouldn't be considered a disability because it wasn't that long ago that women were having babies in the field and went right back to work. So what they're saying,
James, not that it is a disability, but this professor is trying to get this passed because, I guess, to safeguard women that are in jobs that do require certain things that their pregnancy would hinder them from being able to do. They're trying to get their rights protected by putting it in by listing that under a disability.
At least I can see that. All right, but if you like setting fires, I should be able to get paid to sit home and set fires.
The valid point is that what this professor is saying is that because a woman cannot do certain tasks at her job because she is pregnant, that there should be a disability clause that protects her because she cannot meet certain productivity levels. And that is where I say that's bogus.
All right. I'm just like, look, right, if you can't lift 10 pounds, because most women or most,
don't do
most
it.
Jobs
don't do it,
have,
Dick.
Excuse me?
I was going to say, don't do it. I don't know what you're about to say, but go ahead.
You know, if you can't lift 10 pounds, then you shouldn't be at work anyway. You should be on bed rest. Okay? You shouldn't be at work anyway.
Don't
do it. All right? And frankly, why should you get paid? Why should you get leave time for that? Because even if you were at work, there's no man there that isn't going to lift that for you.
Well, this is true, but you know, more men are being pushed out of the workforce today than ever before. But that being said, this goes right back to the argument that we had on the first day of the show, show number one, folks, on January 3rd, where I said that the business is protecting themselves for situations like this. And now there's
a situation like this. No, it's still apples and oranges, Reese, because here it is. You're saying, well, a woman can't go, but you'll look over, or you'll overlook, excuse me, you'll overlook a pyromanian, pedophilian kleptomaniac.
No, that's Greece. We're talking about here in the United States. When they're talking
well,
about
in
women.
The United States, do you really think Greece isn't following the United States? This didn't start there.
I mean, we're
paying people.
I think that the United States is following the European countries. In fact, I've seen more.
Following? Okay.
No, hear me out. Listen, this is the reason why we have smart cars. They're following the European. This is the reason why. We have smart cars.
And ghetto-free technology.
Exactly.
Ghetto-free technology.
It's because of Europeans. We want it to be a more European. Look at the cars they drive in Europe. Now, all of a sudden, smart cars are a big deal here. Smaller cars and more fuel-efficient cars are a big deal here because they're very prominent in European countries. They drive smaller cars. Now people in America need to drive smaller cars. It's sort of a European sort of a template that Americans are trying to follow. The disability argument, I'm not saying that there's ever going to be pedophilia as a disability in the United States. If that ever happens, trust me, it's going to be crazy. But
It's already happening in the United States. It's used as a way to get out of jail.
R. Kelly.
What's that?
It's used as a way to get out of jail. They don't go to jail. They go to therapy.
Stacey said R. Kelly. That's so
R. Kelly, there you go. Case in point. Even Michael Jackson.
No.
I mean,
the pregnancy thing is, hold on, let's stick to the pregnancy thing because that's important. Is pregnancy a disability? And here's a professor who's saying that a pregnant woman working hard labor or manual labor jobs can be fired.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up. Can you repeat that?
Who is pregnant, who works in a manual labor job, can now use her pregnancy as a disability. And
I would accept that more than most of the reasons people don't go to work.
You can accept that?
Yeah.
Okay, I pulled it up what I read earlier. Here's what, according to CNN.com, their report, Jeanette Cox is an associate professor of law at the University of Dayton who teaches employment discrimination. Her recent work analyzes the relationship between the Americans with Disabilities Act and traditional civil rights laws. She presented her paper, Pregnancy as a Disability, and the amended Americans with Disabilities Act on January 5th at the American Association of Law Schools annual meeting in Washington. So this is what they're saying, that Heather Wiseman was a retails associate and she lost her job. This is preposterous. Lost her job because consuming water while working, an activity necessary to maintain a healthy pregnancy, violated store policy. Now, this is ridiculous.
Consuming water?
She was
drinking water. And she got fired for drinking water?
Yes, they say Heather Wiseman, a retail sales associate, lost her job consuming water while working, an activity necessary to maintain healthy pregnancy, violated store policy.
Okay, so what I'm taking from that is she was actually at work. She was pregnant.
She was pregnant at work.
And she
okay.
was at
she
work.
Was drinking water.
No, no, no,
she
no.
Was at work
okay.
Drinking water.
Wait. Mary, tell the rest of the story. What's the rest of the story?
Well,
why do you need the rest of the story?
No,
the story is right there. The woman was
No. James, let her read the rest of the story. Go on, please.
Okay. So the second person that they used, Victoria, and I can't pronounce her last name, so I don't want to mispronounce it, which was a nursing home activity director, lost her job because her pregnancy interfered with her ability to lift heavy tables. Her employer terminated her employment, even though lifting tables, in quotes, took up a small part, roughly 5 to 10 minutes, end quote, of her day, and her coworkers volunteered to perform this task.
Go on.
So they're saying that covered by the ADA Act, by contrast, can continue working despite of their physical limitations. So like I said, this professor is trying to get that put into a clause, put into the ADA, where women can get disability, and you can't. And what they're saying is, what I went on to read was that a lot of companies like Walmart and so on are hiring people that have disabilities, and they're allowed to continue to work. They're not being fired. They're allowed to continue to work despite their disabilities. And, in fact, they are hired in spite of their disabilities.
Because if she was in a wheelchair, they'd have never fired her.
Exactly.
Oh, James, come on.
It's a disability, is it not? And the thing is, if you really think it's not going to be abused, and like you want to say, it's going to open the floodgates. All right. If you really think it's not going to be abused, where if you them say that I'm not going to hire you because you're pregnant, then I'm not going to hire you because you're in a wheelchair. I'm not going to hire you because you use canes to walk.
Well, it's,
right?
it's not
I'm
even
not
about
hire
them
you
hiring.
Because you have a speech
it's,
impediment.
It's not or, even
or
about hiring
you.
Them. They're,
oh,
hold on, James. It's not even about hiring them. They're being hired. The right. the fact of the matter is that they are their employment is being terminated because they are drinking water on the job, which is something that you must do to maintain a healthy pregnancy, and that
well,
this
well,
other
well,
woman
well,
is being
well,
terminated
well,
because
so
she can't lift
then,
tables.
Drinking water is not it's not carte blanche to pregnancy. I mean, you have to, if you're a human being, you have to drink water.
Wait, hold on.
You can fire a woman for drinking
James,
water, then you can fire a man for drinking water.
James, can you imagine that exchange? What are you doing? What are you doing? Wait. What are you doing? I'm thirsty, boss. You're thirsty? Get the hell out of my office. You're lying. Ain't no drinking water in here.
Wow.
I'm kicking the trees, boss.
Most companies now have water coolers that they pay for their employees to drink water. Now, listen to this. According to the EEOC regulations issued in 2011, the amended ADA requires employers to accommodate persons who experience shortness of breath and fatigue when walking distances people could walk without experiencing such effects. So what else are we going to put on the list? Are you serious? Like, are you serious?
You might as well not even show up for work at all.
Hold on.
I mean, because you can't do anything.
I don't think that Mary is buying the whole pregnancy disability thing. Mary, is that the case?
Listen. I don't think that it should have to go to this extreme. I understand where these women are coming from. Like I said before, I don't have any children. I probably will not. I'm a little, you know, a little set in my ways, and I probably will not. If it happens, it happens. And I would want to have the rights that every other woman, that every other person should have. But how far are we really taking this? How far is this really going to go? I mean, can
Very
the employer, you can't. You can't drink water on your job? Give me a break.
What the hell is that?
It's gone farther than that. It's saying that women can't drink water.
It's pregnant women.
Hey,
well, who gets pregnant? Men can't get pregnant.
So who's this going to affect? James, what the hell do you have in your hand? Is that Aquafina? Get the hell out of here. You're fired.
And it's going to affect everything else. It's going to affect everything else because, you know, you can't have water cooler conversations anymore. So there goes, you know, there goes talk radio, there goes TV, there goes, did you hear, hey, you can't do anything now. Oh, you can't drink water.
I got a question. Hold on, JC, go ahead.
And how the hell do you accommodate someone with fatigue and shortness of breath while walking at work?
You don't require
them
to walk.
Yeah, so now you can't even climb the stairs to get in the door.
I'm going to provide you oxygen and fan you off because you're tired from your walk back from the snack machine?
Well, okay, wait. Let's not assume that it's just big people that they're referring to.
Are you kidding me?
There are people that do have people live and go to work every day with COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, for you know different reasons, whether it was smoking or being exposed.
No, I'm not fat. I'm just big boned.
No, Mary's turning the blind eye. The blind eye, Mary.
Yeah, you know what? You know what?
You need to smoke marijuana.
You know, you're not. Jamie said, "I'm not fat. I'm just big boned." What do you got? Dinosaur bones? No.
Let's take the smoking receptacle from outside and put it at your desk.
It's. You know what? This is again. This is the reason why I brought up the grease thing, because I tell you, this entitlement society is run amok. That's the bottom line. We're having fun with it, but this is what, or this is this, that the world has come to. It's become such an entitlement society that everything is turning into some sort of disability. I mean, Greece, for them to say that pyromania, kleptomania, pedophilia is some sort of disability, I mean, what isn't a disability? I mean, can I say that...
Well, that's happening here nowadays anyway, so...
But James, can I say that I have a disability because I only like white women? I don't like Negro broads. Can I now use that as a disability? And somebody can say...
Well, being that you're Negro, there's an app for that. There's an app for that.
And you don't play pro sport. You don't play pro basketball.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
I'm black. Exactly. I'm 6'5".
I'm Negro. I can't dance.
Right.
I got a disability.
I'm 6'5". I'm black. I like white women and can't play basketball. Give me a.
And you're a Republican.
And I'm a Republican. Man,
yeah, write the check. Somebody give him a check.
Wait, you just.
Can I just say what I just want to go? I just want to touch back on this because I just read something that is so disturbing. This is how the courts referred to this. This is the court's remaining objection to providing the ADA accommodations to pregnant workers.
Go for it.
This is how the courts referred to it. In quotes, out of quotes, the court's remaining objection to providing ADA accommodations to pregnant workers is pregnancy is, in quotes, the natural consequence of a properly functioning reproductive system, end quote, and therefore cannot be a disability.
An act of God.
Wow.
An act of God.
You can't.
Listen to me. Nothing makes it. I'm taking a break. That's it. I'm taking a break.
An act of God clause.
Right, listen. It's Reese on the radio. The number is 347-308-8701. I love this conversation. Hey, when we come back, Geraldo Rivera says, and I quote, that people should be vetted before they have guilt. When we come back, it's on the radio.
I agree.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta. I'm
Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question, which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer, Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative, rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun. Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby, twinkle, twinkle.
Holy crap, we're live. I'm sorry. It's recently back. I can't believe it. I actually just left you with dead air. That's my apology. Please forgive me. It's recently on the radio, and we're back. So, the number's 347-308-8701. I didn't realize that we actually came back from a commercial because we were talking behind the scenes. That's how involved we were. But you know what? It happens to me. My apologies. Everybody's back in the air. Kool-Aid Man, James Montgomery.
Oh, yeah.
Air. James Montgomery is back. Let's go to Mary. Make sure that Mary's on there. Mary, are you there? Oh, are you there?
Yep, no? I'm here.
There we go. She's there. So I want to talk about, because we talked about the earlier case, you know, with the sex abuse allegations against that family. And we talked about this whole thing about pregnancy and women using that as disability. Now, before we go, because we got about 25 minutes, and I want to get into an argument. And I'm letting you know, folks, that I'm ready for the argument. Because there's something you need to hear that Geraldo Rivera said. Now, Geraldo Rivera does a show on WABC here in New York, and he's on from 10 to 12. And he was talking about all of these cases where parents have killed their children, abused their children, and he's sick and tired of hearing these stories. And he's so affected by it, and we all are. Casey Anthony, you know, what's the woman's name who killed her 5 children, drowned them all in the bathtub? Susan,
that was horrific.
Yeah, Susan Smith, who put her kids in the car seats in the back of her car and pushed it into a river and then blamed a black man and sent everybody out in a wild goose chase. But Geraldo Rivera said something in light of all those stories that he's covered. Take a listen, and we'll get your opinion.
I swear to God, you talk about sickos. You talk about sickos. You should need to have a license to have a child. You should be vetted. I think I can't stand these stories. I've covered so many of these toddler torture murders. It's just something that is unbelievable.
So he's talking about these toddler murders, and he says there needs to be some government intervention, that parents, new parents, need to be vetted. And for those of you who don't understand what vetted means, is that you need to go through some sort of scrutiny before you get somebody pregnant. Hey, hi, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, you want to have kids? Well, let's get your psychological profile. Mr. Smith, are you a psychopath? How about you, Mrs. Smith? Huh? You ever left a dead rabbit in your ex-boyfriend's kitchen? You ever beat a small child for no apparent reason? Are you a weirdo? Do you like wearing pantyhose and spanking yourself with a ladle? Tell me.
You know, I'm so tired of this guy. He's just, I'm incensed. I just want to hit him in the face with a chair. Oh, wait,
that's already happened.
Here's what I'm asking. Listen, we've heard these horrific, and we have. There's no denying it. We've heard these horrific stories about children being abused, children dying horrifically, abused and then dead. We got guys who have been arrested for beating up 4-month-olds, you know, stepfathers killing their children because they wouldn't eat cereal, crap like that. But do you think that it's enough that we need to start vetting people in order to have children? Should we get to that point? Or is it that bad? Or are we only being sensationalized by the press? Your thoughts, Mary?
How much more is the government going to take a hold of? I mean, what else are they going to regulate? It's crazy. Now, I mean, who's going to do this regulation? Is it the same people that came up with the curriculum to teach, you know, third graders about how many beatings Frederick Douglass got? I mean, who's going to be doing these interviews with, you know, who's going to be vetting these soon-to-be or hopefully soon-to-be parents? It's preposterous. It really is. I agree. I see the point, and I see it in some ways. But, I mean, if we start letting the government regulate things like this, what's next?
James?
I happen to agree.
You agree with Mary. Please say you agree with Mary.
No. I agree with Geraldo.
What?
Oh, my God.
What?
I happen to agree with Geraldo. Because, and the thing is, it's not something that Reese, you know this. It's not something that we haven't talked about. And it's not, and, you know, there's the old adage, you know, you need to take a test and do anything from driving a car to owning a house. Well, not owning a house, but, you know, driving a car and things of that nature. But anybody can be a parent. Yes, I think that that there should be at least a class or something that
whoa,
regulates.
Whoa,
so, you know.
Whoa, there should be a JC, please do me a favor, dude. Tell me.
There are
please,
classes.
Hold
there
on.
There are
JC,
classes, but that doesn't. Go ahead.
Mary, please, hold on. JC, please tell me that you are reasonable enough to agree that this is out of line.
No, I don't.
Oh my God.
No, I don't either.
No, I really
mean,
do.
The thing is, the government, you know, first and foremost, when you're saying about regulation, okay, and I know you, Reese, I'm sure your first instinct is to say, oh, well, that's big government. Well, you know what? It only seems to be big government when we ask you to do your jobs. It's big government when we ask you to do something. You can tell us who we can marry. You can tell us where we can buy a house. You can tell us this. You can tell us that. You can tell us that. But
Jamie, I don't want to get off the subject, but the government can't tell you where you can buy a house. But go back to your point. Go on.
Not buy a house. That was all right. That was out of there. But you know, you can tell us who we can marry. You can tell us. You can regulate where we pray, how we pray. And things of that nature, but you can't regulate if you should be a parent or not,
James.
James, do you agree with the fact that that is something that our government should be regulating? First of all, there are classes.
Somebody has
parenting,
to. The fact of the matter is,
there is information out there, and there are parenting classes. There are things that soon-to-be parents, you know, can take. There are things like that. Listen, when you're killing children and all, you know, you're killing your child because you are, you know, because they didn't eat cereal or they didn't eat the cereal that you wanted them to eat. Obviously, this mm-hmm. person was totally out of their mind. So,
yes.
I mean,
but
I,
James,
I
Mary,
but
if I may, let me hold on, James, let me cut it. I need to say this. Hear me out. What's prominent in this whole discussion is this, is that what we have today is a culture of unplanned. Now listen to what I'm saying when I say this. See, planned parenthood is two people get together and they plan to have a child. But we've become a culture where people have sex and get pregnant who aren't prepared for that pregnancy. And
right.
those people,
I'm glad you said that.
The ones who are more likely to do something heinous to a child. But if you plan parenthood, you and your wife, you and your girlfriend, let's have a baby. I think we'll be great parents. Those people are less likely to abuse and hurt their children. These people who are having children that are unplanned are more likely. Now, how do we regulate unplanned parenthood? You see my point? Because
yes. I see your point, and I have an answer for that.
No. Geraldo's missing a very valid point, James. The very valid point is that these were not people if you ask these people, if you go to the guy who perpetrated or this crime against that child, whomever it is, the mother or the father, if you go to them and you say, did you plan this pregnancy? And they will all tell you, no, we did not. That the baby, we got pregnant by accident.
Okay. Now, taking that a step further, I defy you to say or to find out that most of those people who will say they didn't plan it are teenagers.
You're probably right.
First and foremost, they're young, having young. They're not ready to take care of themselves yet. So they may not be having children.
But
now,
James,
yeah.
How do you regulate teenagers having
sex? How do you regulate that? You put sex education back in schools.
Oh,
You put sex education back in schools, and you do it in a realistic way. It's not abstinence, because no one's abstaining anymore, all right? No one's abstaining. There are so many young kids having kids nowadays. And
how do you write?
But if you try to teach a child, if you try to teach a teenager, if you're in a school, you're a teacher, and you're in and you tell a child that they need to use a condom, you can be fired.
James, okay, all that into consideration, and Mary, I want you to chime in on this one. So we bring sex education back into the schools, and we tell children what?
We tell children what? This is what can happen. This is how you prevent it.
Why are we putting this on school, first of all?
See, exactly.
On
school.
Because parents aren't doing it parents aren't doing it either.
Well,
and again,
the parents are the ones that are responsible for it. They did their deed. They laid down together.
Mm-hmm.
They did whatever. They conceived this child. It is the parents' responsibility to teach their children about safe sex, because in the world we live in today, most teenagers are not abstinent. They're not having sex. They're having sex. But teach them about condoms. Have those conversations. Teach girls about using birth control and things to that nature. Educate them, but that comes from home. It doesn't just come at school. Now, should sexual education
doesn't just
be
come
back
home,
in
but
school?
But it's not happening at home either, because if it was happening at home,
just because it's not happening at home, James, doesn't say that, oh, well, it's not happening at home, so we should put this on the education system. You can't just
I'm not saying it's not happening at home, so whatever. I'm not just putting it on the education system. And frankly, you know, this is a six of one, half a dozen of the other, because I do believe what you're saying. Yeah, it is the parents' job. But first and foremost, what teenager listens to their parents?
Oh, James.
What teenager wants to have a sexual conversation with their parent? Whether it's your mother or your father, you're not going to want to have that conversation. You would. Let me finish my thought. All right. You were more apt to talk to either a teacher or a counselor or anyone other than your parent.
Now,
even if your parent is willing
to
talk to you about it.
James.
Yeah.
Truth be told, listen, parents have to initiate a conversation with their children when they are younger, and they need to introduce them to sexuality, because it is their job as a parent. If they introduce them to sexuality, if parents aren't doing that, and this is something that is
and I'm not saying that all parents are doing that.
No, I need you to hear.
Do
this
you
is
really
want
to talk to your mom about sex?
James,
can
this
you,
is a
think about it.
James.
Think about it. Let me just ask
James,
you one
James,
thing.
James,
Let
no,
me
no,
ask
no.
you one thing. Hold on.
Go ahead.
Can you picture your mother having sex?
No, it's not about that.
There you go.
Listen to me. This is what's not apparent in the lexicon of where we live today. And I want you to hear this. This is very important that you understand this. Because teenage pregnancy is more prominent in not just the minority community, in all communities, even those who are, you know, not well-to-do. But here's the bottom line. In those communities.
Even in the well-to-do.
James, the one conversation or the least conversations that are happening at the dinner table picture of the deck is these conversations. Finances. Family medical health. In other words, kids they don't have conversations with their children about finances, about medical, meaning they don't know who had diabetes, who had cancer, who had They don't talk to their children about sex. These conversations are not being held at the dinner table today between their parents because parents are working two jobs or they have two parents who are working jobs. They're not sitting at home taking care of their children, taking care of their children on those levels. We don't have enough dinner time conversations with our children today than we used to back in the day. And because of that, children are learning more about sex and sexuality through their friends and through their peers. And with that, they're learning the wrong things and they're making these mistakes. But what we're saying is the parents aren't there and we don't want them learning from their peers who don't know any better. Let's put that burden in school. And what I say is that
because that's where they congregate. That's where they're being involved with each other. This is where the problem is. And usually it's in school. The problem is usually in school. Okay? So why not have it in the school where the problem is?
So
but
you're saying
ground zero. That's ground zero. So why shouldn't why shouldn't you be on the front line?
Let Mary go and chime in. Go ahead, Mary.
Okay. You're saying ground zero is at school. Ground zero, in my opinion, is at home. Because if you're taught, if you have good parents with some common sense and you're taught things at home, when you get to school where you have all of those, where there's boys or there's girls and you have all of these things going on, if you have parents that have taught you the right way to do things or the best way for you, then you will be able to abstain from getting involved in any of that extracurricular activity, might we call it.
Really? And then, so where does peer pressure come in?
Well, okay, so you're saying the government should intervene into peer pressure? How does the government fight?
What I'm saying is this. First of all, well, I know I keep saying that. That's like my thing. But let me start by saying, relating it to myself, all right? The last thing I wanted to do was talk about sex with my mom or anyone else, okay? So, and she tried. I'm not saying that parents aren't doing it, because there are parents that are. But the first thing that child was going to do was turn it off. Oh, I don't want to talk about this. Oh, I'm not,
So they're turned off by...
Because as soon as the conversation starts, you know what me and your father used to do?
Who starts the conversation off that way? Who in their right mind would start a sexual education conversation with their child?
Well, how are you
going to
start the sexual conversation? How are you going to start the sexual conversation? Even if you start a conversation with, are you having sex? All right?
You shouldn't even start it. James, you shouldn't start it that way.
Any child is going to tell you no. That's the first answer they're going to give you.
So you believe that the government can supersede that? You think the government can intervene in that parent?
I think there should be a partnership. Yes.
Okay.
If you're getting it from all sides, pun intended, then something's going to penetrate, pun intended.
JC's on the line. JC, you have an opinion
on this? Absolutely not. I'm coming from a perspective of I've lived it.
Okay.
Now, I had a very pretty much open relationship with my parents. We talked about everything. Although my parents both worked one and two jobs at some point growing up, it doesn't take not even a good 10 minutes out of your day to have that conversation.
Right.
I remember when I was 17 and I had to tell my mom that I was about to be a dad. At 17, I remember it wasn't discussed, but the fear in my parents' faces when I told them that I was going to be a dad and they were going to be grandparents. The fear that they didn't think that I was ready. And I remember the conversations that followed, and it all boiled down to fear. So that once my kids hit their teens, and we pretty much had the same pretty much the same relationship where we were able to discuss sexual matters, everything. And I started talking to my kids young. And Reese knew my kids when my kids were teens. I made sure that I found the time to discuss that with them, because it has to start at home. It has to.
Yeah.
I made sure that I found time to discuss it with them at home, because I know that I didn't want that fear that my parents had about my kids. Even though my kids are pretty mature, I think I did a pretty damn good job raising them. And I know that mistakes happen.
Yeah, but right. You know what? Even though mistakes happen, I think
mistakes
that
happen.
What we need to do is start encouraging parents to be more active in their children's lives, even on the issue of sex. There are too many parents who are afraid, even though you, as you said, James, that kids will, you know, they go, I don't want to. We have to talk to our children about it. We cannot be afraid. And parents.
But as you said, we're also in a society where even if you try to, then, you know, it's like you're damned if you do it and you're damned if you don't. Right? Because you have so many people on one side saying, oh, no, don't do that. Teach them about
God. Well,
then
I kind of had, then James,
then,
let me cut in here. Then that kind of has something to do with you and your kids' relationship.
Exactly.
I mean, who can your kids trust if they can't trust to have a conversation with you?
Okay.
Yeah.
You
with
had
the
same
exactly.
relationship. You had the same relationship, JC, and yet you still had a child at 17.
But no, he's saying because he had the conversation after the fact.
After the fact. Okay.
I had a conversation after the fact with my parents. I mean, we had a pretty open relationship. That was something that we really didn't discuss. But I said I learned my lesson and what to do when my kids were older. When I went through that, like I said, the fear that my parents felt.
Right.
It wasn't discussed or you're stupid or anything like that. I'm sure that a lot of that went on behind my back, but it's just a fear. And that I felt emanating from their bodies and their faces and the way they looked at me like boy, you're not ready.
And
yeah.
There are, according, if I can jump in real quick, there, according to a report by the Guttmacher Institute in 2006, and this is based off of something that was put in the New York Times, 750,000 teens between 15 and 19 become pregnant every year. 750,000 teens every year. So obviously someone has dropped the ball somewhere, and it starts with the parents.
It has to. I can't believe that anybody would suggest and they should in any way intervene in what it is that we should do with our children. Guys, we're coming up on the last minute of the show. As always, Mary, and JC, the producer, of Kool-Aid Man.
Oh, yeah.
On the line. And, you know, love each and every one of you every day checking us out. Be back tomorrow. We may even extend this into tomorrow's conversation. Always.
We should.
The news, the views, my opinion, and a couple of guys who are on the show to refute it. They'll be on the air tomorrow. Tomorrow is Wednesday. I don't have a word for Wednesday. We're not going to call it Wacky Wednesday, but Wednesday is always Wednesday. And we'll talk about everything it is that's in the news. Thank you guys for coming in. Thank you for logging on the radio on blogtalkradio.com. We appreciate you. We love you and so much for making us. We love you. It's Reese on the Radio. We'll see you tomorrow, same time. Same place.